Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
This time, a former Suns player who you might remember as T-Rex.
More video in just a moment, but this is Rex Chapman's mugshot, and we are learning a lot more about the charges.
I've read where you said you struggled with drugs from an early age. When did drugs enter your life?
So the pills are too expensive, and so somebody turned me on to heroin, and I would do heroin, and then I would smoke meth to make sure I could level out. Once I took an opiate, you know, because I was taking them as prescribed, and then I started snorting them. And once I started snorting them, I was like, this is it.
Welcome to Charges. I'm your host, Rex Chapman. Mike Tyson once said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. But sometimes you never see what's about to hit you. For me, I never thought the hardest part of my career as a professional athlete would be fighting off an addiction to painkillers, opioids, and fighting to keep my relationships, my reputation, even my dignity, as a disease was attacking all aspects of my life. That fight was and is the hardest of my career as a professional basketball player, and I never fought anybody. But today's guest, he knows exactly what it's like to get punched in the mouth, and yet his fight and my fight are the same. And he knows all too well how much more pain can come from a pill than any punch ever thrown by a human. And that includes Mike Tyson. This is Charges. Charges. Welcome to the show, my friend, Isaac Valley Flag. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Man, I'm so excited. We just kind of got to, you know, a little bit of a Twitter relationship. And man, I've followed your story on and off throughout the years. My son is a big MMA fan, and I'm really happy for you and to see where you are today.
Thanks, Ben. It's a cool place to be, especially considering where I was about 4 years ago. You know what I mean?
And
you do know what I mean, right?
Yeah, and it's baby steps, man. And I was brushing up on some things today, and so much of it resonated. Let's start here. How the hell does somebody decide, I want to be a professional fighter?
I had another buddy who we were working in a bar, and it just kind of seemed like it was a fun thing to do. I kind of grew up getting into fights, street fights and stuff. And somewhere along the line, they told me I could do it and I wasn't going to get in trouble. And I might even get paid at some point. So that was, you know, that was like MMA's the early days before it was like really as big as it was, the UFC was a thing, but it wasn't like a thing, like a force like it is now, you know?
Right.
So it was that, that's kind of
how old I were just, you?
I was early 20s. So I got into it late. You know, a lot of the guys these days, they start doing stuff because the sport's gotten so big. They start doing stuff at a real young age, you know? And it just wasn't the case when I was younger. I just kind of dug the whole aspect of fighting. And then I fell in love with like the more spiritual side of the fighting game too, you know?
Yeah. I was wondering about that. You know, I've heard some fighters talk about how it really is more of an art form than about the violence or actual fighting. What do you view it as?
So, number one, I do love the violence of it. I mean, you know what I mean? But there's something really, for lack of a better word, peaceful about being in there with another human being. And it's just, you know, as much as there is crowd noise and stuff, it's just you and them, like, essentially locked in together. And you're really paying attention to the breathing and everything. And you're very much in the moment, you know? And so there's, like, a real beauty to fighting. There really is, you know? And I think that... I mean, it is, look, it's violent. We're fighting each other. But right. At the same time, there's a lot of people who find a certain amount of like of peace doing that, you know, and I think I'm one of them. So.
And I obviously didn't compete like this in a sport where you actually, you know, fight. We all talk about, well, we went to war last night and we've battled them. No, we didn't.
Yeah, basketball players never fight. Let's get
no,
that. Let's,
no, they're, nor can we. You no, know, you, yeah, just, no, you got to fight somebody for 3 seconds till they break you up.
Right, right. Let's just get that out of the way right
Let's
now.
Get it out of the way. No, so I'm wondering though, but you know, playing that sport, you know, there, no matter how hard you go at one another, there's a mutual respect. And I got to think that that's, you know, some of it too, that piece of being in the ring with someone else, you know, is a professional and you guys are gonna, I mean, I would think, don't you sort of have a kinship, even though you're trying to kick that person's ass?
So I got lucky. I got to fight guys who were like kind of my heroes. So, I mean, it was kind of cool. Like Eves Edwards and Takanori Gomi those are the guys who I really liked coming up. And I got to fight them, you know? There is that kind of kinship, especially when you're fighting somebody who you look up to, you know?
Right. So. Right. Well, tell me about the training that somebody has to do to compete in MMA and not like jumping rope and push-ups, like what it's like to learn all the fighting styles, how to defend things, all that.
So the learning part, I mean, that's the other part of it that's really cool is you are learning a craft, you know, and it's intense and it's fun. At my age, because I started so late, I kind of was behind the curve and I pushed myself as hard as I could to try to catch up with these like young guys. Like Cub Swanson is a really good friend of mine and he started young and he would come out here to Albuquerque and I always felt like I had to work harder than him because I didn't have the same amount of time in this that left in the sport or natural ability as him or anything like that. So I always pushed myself as hard as I could to try to get better at it, you know?
Were you an athlete growing up? Did you play sports? Did you, or you don't have to play sports to be an athlete, but did you have an athletic background growing up?
No, so I never had a dad, so I don't know, father in the house until like later on. And I just kind of had a hippie mom who wrote poetry, so I don't even know if I was an
athlete.
That's
awesome,
you know?
Though. Yeah, that's awesome though. But finding out, it's amazing to go through, you know, 20 years of your life. And then all of a sudden, you know, I like the new sports, like in the Olympics every year. I enjoy that. I'm so thrilled to see, you know, it's a violent sport and I know you only have a short window of time to do it, but I'm really excited for, you know, there to be another profession outside of just traditional boxing, which is, that's what it was when I was growing up. I remember in my hometown, they had something called, tough man competitions. And those were just bare knuckle kind of things until one person got knocked out. And, you know, it's just amazing to see where the sport and where mixed martial arts has gone over the last 30 years.
I love watching the sport grow. I honestly think that MMA, as much as MMA and boxing compete with each other as far as like for viewership and stuff, I think they also push each other to get better, you know? You're seeing people pick up stuff from other skill sets and other sports, and you're also seeing boxing now starting to get a revival of being a little bit more exciting than it was after Mike Tyson and after the 80s boxers, you know. For a while, we weren't treated to any of the Hagler-Hearn stuff. It was just kind of boring, you know. So, and I think mixed martial arts kind of nipping at its heels really forced it into a place where now it's gotten exciting again.
I agree with that. Let's talk about the process of becoming a pro. What is that like? Who do you have to beat or impress? Or better question, how do you even get noticed? Because there's so many MMA and UFC style gyms. How does one go from just doing that to trying to make a living? In the NBA, there's a pretty clear path. You go to college, you go to the NBA. How did you decipher all of that?
When I started off, you never had an amateur pro kind of deal. You started fighting, and then I got lucky enough to be in one of the better gyms in the world in Albuquerque, and just did a certain amount of rounds with all the really talented A-level guys, and then I beat some guys, and people took notice of me. You know,
you getting your ass kicked at first by some guys when you just didn't know what you're doing yet?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of when I was coming up. I think because we didn't know any better, you earned your lumps in the gym. I mean, you know, you really did. And there was some real talent in our gym. You know, we had Cowboy Cerrone and Cub and a bunch of guys, you know, and I would just get in front of them because I wanted time in front of the coach. And I knew that it would make me better talking to them and training with them. So that's just what I did. And again, I was an older guy, so it's not like I had like this, I didn't ever have anybody looking out for me like these younger, talented guys did, you know? You got to remember, Cowboy's six years younger than me, and his career in the WEC and USC started way, like, long before mine did. I just thought it was a cool deal, and I wanted a spot, you know?
You have to be a really good student, though. I don't know how you did it growing up and when you were in school or everything, but it obviously appears that there's something with this sport that you found intriguing and you were able to pick it up, I mean, pretty damn quickly. And it takes a lot of studying, you know, and being engaged.
As much as it was studying, just a bunch of hard work. I mean, I was always known as like, I would put in extra time. I would put in, you know, more time because I knew that I didn't have the advantage of having the talent that some of these guys did. And I knew where I was. So I worked my ass off, you know?
Fantastic. How do you describe the feeling being in the ring when your fight's about to start? Are you focused on your plan? Are you just trying to get quiet in your mind, or are you amped and ready to roll?
So the minute I get in there, I get real quiet. I mean, like leading up to a fight, I'm super nervous and super, I mean, it's a scary deal. You're literally about to go fight somebody and possibly get knocked out on TV or whatever they're, you know, whatever you're looking at, your home crowd or whatever. But then once you get in there, like I said, everything gets kind of quiet again. You know, I mean, really, like, it's just you and that other guy at that point. And you hear you hone in on your coaches, and it's just really, you're there to do your thing, kind of. And it's like what you worked hard for, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, you're part of the UFC and you're in the mix. Tell me what it's like to be a part of, you know, one of these big cards and the whole process. Who's helping you figure out who to fight and, you know, what to do when fights fall apart?
So I had good managers and good coaching, luckily, along the way. And, you know, when we get into the addiction stuff, we'll get in. My career didn't last very long in the UFC. I found pain pills like almost immediately, you know, and you can see kind of from my first fight to my second fight, even that with like the downfall, like the starting of the addiction, you know, I had done some, you know, I fought for another organization that the UFC owned called Strikeforce, and I beat a bigger name at the time. And then I had my first fight in the UFC against a guy named Eves Edwards. And then right after that, I hurt my back. And that was kind of like the, you know, I kind of messed around with stuff, but that was like it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, you know, that part of it became more exciting than the fight itself. You know?
I get it. You know, I've read where you said you struggled with drugs from an early age. When did drugs enter your life?
When I was like, I mean, drinking 12, 13. Wow. Drinking was always part of my family. So it was like we were the family of like taking sips at the family reunions. You know what I mean?
And they didn't mind. Parents didn't mind or no. Adults didn't mind. Yeah. Get it.
Yeah. It was just I think it was just different then, you know, I mean, it was just what you did at family stuff, you know? So there was always that, but like on my own, like 12 or 13, real young, like I look at my daughter who's 15 now, and I'm thinking, man, you are not even close to ready to have any drinks. And I'm like, right. How the hell,
you know? I know. Isaac is a great example of how things can go downhill quickly. From drinking as a youngster at family functions to using at parties to letting it all affect his livelihood as an MMA fighter. I, for one, know the dangers of opioids from my playing career and thereafter. Although basketball can be brutal to the body, there is no comparison to what an MMA fighter is put through. In the ring and in the ranks, Isaac was ascending, but on the inside, his greatest battle was about to begin.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
So, at what point did it go from alcohol to something else?
So, I have always struggled and kind of went in and out of some sort of a program and like white knuckled stuff and things like that. But, you know, and I've always dabbled in drugs, but like the really hard opiate stuff wasn't until this last little stint that I had, you know, like in 2012 I started.
Were you someone who partied, Isaac, or someone who used, to kind of sort of make things go away or to level out?
I started by being a partier. I mean, like I always thought that that's how you unwound. And I saw people who could party just party. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, I'm sure just like you see people celebrate after a game, right? And you're like, yeah, I can do that. And I just, you know, so that's how it started. But then towards the end of it, it was just me getting high in my garage by myself, you know? So, and that was just, there's nothing there except for masking something, some other yes. trauma that I'm trying to deal with, you know?
Yeah.
Towards the
yeah.
end, there's no more party left, you know? I mean, it's just, you know.
I remember getting in, you know, at first, everybody says it's, you know, at first drugs are fun and then it's fun with problems and then it's just problems after a while. Right. Ike, let's talk about pain meds in gyms and locker rooms. I'm not trying to get you to get anybody in trouble, but what was that like in the UFC and MMA world?
So everybody, again, you know, like you're dealing with a bunch of alpha males, or alpha male mentality kind of stuff that it's like guys, if they were using, and I know a few guys who were, cause we talk about it now and they've addressed some issues, but you hid that stuff cause you didn't want anybody knowing that you had a weakness right. of some sort, you know? So, you know, I found my guy but it's not
so
like
this
we
is
were
a guy,
all,
your doctor was outside the gym.
Yeah, outside the gym. And so I found a guy that wasn't going to relay stuff back to anybody.
Right.
You know,
I
think, you know, there was a couple guys, there's a few guys in the gym who knew I was doing stuff by the time it was too late. But I tried to keep it hidden the best that I could, you know.
Right.
I didn't, right. you know, I didn't think I knew how dangerous because I considered myself such a strong guy. I didn't think that I was going to have the same issues with opiates that everybody else did. You know what I mean? And I'm sure you were the same way, right? I mean, you're a professional athlete. You've gotten
can
yourself
handle
to this,
whatever it is. Yeah.
Right.
Come on.
You've gotten yourself this far. So I'm going to be able to handle this and I'll just stop after whatever, yep. you know?
Yeah. You feel invincible. Like you're one of one, you know, you just yeah. can do anything. Right.
Yeah. And you know, it's, yeah, you really do. And it's crazy how much, And I think you're seeing a lot of guys, especially fighters now, you're seeing a lot of guys who are starting to get affected by that mental health wise and then addiction wise and everything. I mean, it's a big deal. You're taking a bunch of kids who didn't know anything, letting us get hit, or we put ourselves in there, but we all get hit in the head a bunch. And then you put us in front of a camera and things are bound to get a little bit weird, you know?
No question about it. You know, I've said this before on the show, but I remember when I took OxyContin, you know, my brain immediately had a reaction that was like, oh shit, I really like this. This is my jam. You know, I want to feel this way all the time. That's immediately what I felt, which we know not everyone feels like that. You had something similar happen though, right?
Oh yeah. That was like, once I took an opiate, you know, because I was taking them as prescribed, and then I started snorting them. And once I started snorting them, I was like, this is it. Like, this
yeah.
is like...
Wow, I never snorted them. I chewed them. I chewed them to try to get in. I've heard of the, you know, I got into rehab and heard of the snorting. But man, that's got to be, oh my goodness.
Look, man, like we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't one of the greatest feelings in the world. You know what
I'm
I mean?
I'm with you. Yes.
And it's one of those things that just eventually kicked the shit out of me. But I mean, like, I loved it, man. I really, until I didn't, I loved it, you know?
Same. You know, For me, the initial, I was always kind of a little socially awkward around people I didn't know. And, you know, being in sports, people would come up all the time and, you know, kind of say hi and introduce themselves. And I'd always felt really just awkward about it. The second that I took the OxyContin, it was like my guard went down. I felt more at ease in my own mind. I felt funnier and smarter and, you know, everything. And before you know it, it's, you know, it's not that way. And you're chasing one pill and the next pill, you know, you get to the point. You're not deciding when to take it anymore. It's telling you when you need it.
It's telling you when it's time, like either physically or, you know, I mean, like the same thing that most of us who are addicted really kind of have is that like, we got something different in our brain that's telling us when it's time. It's not just the physical stuff, you know, it's like really like something clicks in my head that it's like, man, it's time to get high still, you know? So
at one point, you know, I'm sure it was, they were prescribed to you for legitimate, you know, pain, like you said, back pain. How long, and because there's something that goes on with our minds, how long did you take opioids thinking and truly believing, I am only taking this for my physical pain? Until you realized you were, you know, you're actually just taking it because you're addicted and you like the way it makes you feel.
I think there was a certain amount of that throughout the whole time. Like I had to,
right.
You know, like my addict brain, even when I started, so I went from pills to heroin. And even when I started using the heroin, I'm like, well, I really hurt. You know, I mean, like there's a real, you know, and that's bullshit. I mean, it really is bullshit. Like I deal with my pain now and I'm fine, you know? And I know guys who have, my friend Cub, I'll keep using him. He had his whole face broken and he doesn't take opiates, right? But there was this lie in the back of my head the whole time that was like, man, you really need this, you know? I mean, there's that denial thing that you need in order to keep everything kind of running, you know?
That's right. Well, you know, on charges, we talk about, you know, the ugly part, and we'll get back into the good part, but let's get into it. So you're out of the UFC and you're struggling with drugs. How do you end up in a car with guns and drugs and being charged with robbery?
Unlucky,
attempted,
I guess.
Attempted robbery.
Yeah, attempted. I guess I'm just unlucky. You know, it really was, I mean, it was like, I've always done stuff like I shot with some of the police officers over here. And I've been part of like a good community. So all this stuff that I was doing, I mean, I even when I was getting high, I was still shooting with like some people that I knew who were federal agents and stuff.
Right.
So I always pictured myself as a pretty good guy. Yeah. You know, law abiding citizen who just liked to tinker with guns. And it, you know, I knew I was doing a lot of stuff that to feed my addiction as far as stealing goes, that I still was justifying for whatever reason, because it was,
I'm with you, man. I know it's hard to talk about, but I feel your pain right now, because people ask me all the time, they were like, but you stole some stuff and it's painful, right? It's painful to reconcile that we were doing this, right?
Well, it's that whole thing of like, I mean, we are, at the end of the day, we're what somebody would consider a junkie. But it's like, sitting here talking to you, it's hard to imagine either one of us being, you know, you have this idea in your head of what a junkie looks like. You know what I mean? And it's not somebody who performed at a high level in basketball or fighting. A junkie is somebody who you see panhandling, you know?
Yeah. Living in the street. And I was actually there, you know, not literally, but pretty close to it there for a while.
And so was I. The thing that saved my ass is that I have a wife, God, who's like a godsend, who really, like, if it wasn't for her, I'd be homeless, you know, and who I lied to good enough to let me stay in the house. I mean, that's my big thing is I did a lot of stuff to feed my addiction. That's not great. And I'm not proud of it, but the things that I'm really not proud of is the way that I treated my family and friends. You know, I burned a lot of bridges with people who I love greatly, trying to either being super toxic or like trying to feed the addiction and needing to lie about it to everybody,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
So like this, I can talk about I got good war stories about stealing and that kind of, I'll laugh about that. And it's not a funny thing, but I can laugh about that. The thing that really hurts is like the stuff that I did to my family and friends in the name of like continuing to run, you know?
Yeah. They said, so one of the guns had a silencer. What was going on there?
So I was building silencers. And again, so this was the, like the mania of the drugs. I'm like, that's just normal to me, right? I'm sitting in my, you know, your brain really starts to tell you this shit's, that
yeah,
everything that you're doing
okay.
is normal.
That
yeah.
was the thing about OxyContin for me. And I think that was the other thing about it was that I realized it was like every good thought I had kind of hung around and all that. Every bad thought was real fleeting. And it almost made me think, I've said it before, it was almost like it was the, it'll be all right drug. Cause that's what it just tells you, it'll be all right. Okay. Yeah. Those bills came. It'll be all right.
Yeah,
and
right.
You, right.
Yeah. And I'll deal with that later, you know, and that only goes so far before you end up been some serious shit, you know? So your thing was, didn't you get caught stealing like iPods or something?
Yeah. At an Apple store. Yes.
Which to me, again, so my thing, I got caught stealing, I was stealing copper and stuff from a few places, you know?
Yeah. Right. Like, from building sites and stuff.
From stuff like that. And so I'm sitting here looking at us. I'm like, man, that's like, I watch people run out of Apple and people steal copper all the time. I'm like, those guys are junkies. I'm like, oh, wait. Fucking shit.
That's right,
yeah,
man.
You know?
Going from a blossoming MMA career to being arrested for stealing copper from construction sites is a severe fall from grace. To make matters worse for Isaac, opioids weren't the only drug of choice that had entered his world. Sometimes when charges hit, they come at the right time to save a life.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from my life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
What was your lowest point, Isaac, and whatever happened with those charges?
So the charges, luckily, I got a pre-prosecution deferral, and I went to treatment, and I had a great lawyer, obviously, and those charges, I did a good amount of community service and stuff, and they got dismissed because I was looking at some serious time, you know?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I wish that I could say that was even my lowest point, but, I went to jail and got out, and I went to treatment once, and then I kept getting high. And I think the lowest point.
And this
point,
was heroin at this point, because you
heroin
really
and meth.
The pills are too expensive at a certain point, right?
Yeah. So the pills are too expensive, and so somebody turned me on to heroin, and I would do heroin and then I would smoke meth to make sure I could level out.
So meth, see, that's a whole other thing. I'm sorry to begin with, because, you know, sitting in rehab, a lot of people that go down that road, and heroin as well, but once people go down the meth road, you know, it's very hard to recover. And man, I'm really proud of what you're doing.
Well, so both of us, I mean, like, you know this, our chances as recovering opiate addicts are not good, you know? And you throw meth on top of that and it's even worse. But it really is the kind of thing that, like, as long as I'm diligent about some stuff, you know, I'm in a recovery program, and as long as I'm diligent about the stuff that I do, then I stay good, right? And so it really... You know, I know our chances aren't good, and I know as a meth and heroin addict, they're not good. So I stay extra vigilant about that. You know, like I'm of service, and I have I have people that I work with, and I talk to people on a daily basis, and all the stuff that we're told to do. You know.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I'm curious. I know what opioids feel like. I don't know what heroin feels like. I can only imagine, because I know what oxy feels like. What does meth do to your brain? You said you were doing the heroin and then you do the meth later. Is it just a different, is meth more of a stimulant? I guess it is.
Yeah, it's a stimulant, but I mean, really, so I had this whole life that I had to keep lying about so that I could keep a family and so that I could keep appearances up. So I couldn't go too far down and I couldn't go too far up. So I was just using those to kind of, not feel anything, you know. And I don't realize until I look back at stuff, until I look back at the way I have interacted with people, I don't realize how crazy my brain was with the drugs. You know what I mean? Like I look at the thoughts that I have and I'm like, dude, this is like, I'm like, how the fuck did I even, how did even anybody even buy that I wasn't like just losing my fucking mind, you know?
I'm with you, because I drove around in Phoenix for years without a driver's license, you know, and was pulled over all the time. I would get, arrested here and there and for not having a license, and just idiotic thinking, you know?
Yeah, and stuff that seem normal, right?
Yeah. What was your low point? You've been clean now for a couple years, right?
Yeah, for it'll be 4 in February, so.
Ooh, let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Congrats, man.
Thank you. It's
But what caused that? What was that point for you that you just went, "Okay, I can't do it anymore"?
I don't even know. It was kind of looking at the shame in my wife's eyes, you know, yeah. And I wish I had a really cool story about it, but I was just beat down, man. And it was like, I was just beat to the point where I didn't have any answers. I knew I couldn't keep getting high. And I was like, man, I don't know if I can stop getting high, but I knew I couldn't, and like, you know, and so I was completely just defeated and there was really nothing.
Just
I
broken.
Remember just broken in it, you know. It really, I mean, and you know this, there's this demoralization, the arrests are bad, everything like that else is bad. But like, for whatever reason, we have that moment of clarity that we're just like, man, I can't do this anymore. And it was that, man. Like, I remember my wife, I had to explain to her what keeping me well for the weekend till I got into treatment was. And my wife is a straight lace. She works for the DOD, has a clearance, kind of a, you know, we I almost messed that up, but that's who she is. And having to explain to her what keeping me well till I could get into treatment looked like, and then having her drop me off on the edge of what we call the war zone here so I could go pick up dope, you know, and borrowing money from her at the end so I could go get high until I could get into treatment, you know. And that's what it was. It wasn't any one thing, because I can sit in a jail cell. I know how to do that. You know, I know how to hustle. It was really just the feeling of just absolute and utter disgust with myself, with what I had become, kind of, you know.
Same, very much the same. I remember also, you know, getting into treatment and, of course, the detox just being awful. But I remember the first day I got in there, this was 7 years ago, and I got in there and, you know, I had not kept my drug problems a mystery to my friends. Everyone knew, you know, that I'd had my issues. It hadn't been public though. And at this point it had been public, you know, I was arrested and now I'm going into treatment within a couple of weeks. And I remember getting into, and this is before detox, but I remember getting into my room there and, you know, there's no TV, there's no nothing. It's like a little dorm room. And I just remember this moment of sitting on the bed, nobody else was in the room. And I just went, and I exhaled, and I was like, okay, after years of this, I feel like I'm in the right spot. I don't, everybody knows that, you know, I've got issues, and now I got to try to dig out of it. But there was that moment for me. Was there one for you kind of like that?
Yeah, I mean, there was, honestly, so that moment happened, that moment happened when I went to jail, after, when I got arrested, because I was like, cool, I can stop running, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I can quit lying to my wife and everybody else about what's going on. I knew things, not like I was happy about it, but the same thing. It was just the kind of the okay, we're
kind of a relief. Yeah.
Yeah, you know? A relief of like, I can stop now, you know?
Right. Right.
And I didn't, but you know.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. So how does life start turning around for you though? Once you got into treatment, to where you are now, how did it start turning around?
I made a promise to myself that I was going to do whatever anybody asked of me that had to do with recovery, you know, and again, I approached it like I did my fighting. I was going to be very vigilant about and be regimented. If you asked me to do something, I did it, you know, and there was times when I hated it. But I remembered what I told myself that I was going to, you know, and that really, that has served me even to this day of like, I know as long as I keep doing the next right thing, that whatever this higher power thing is going to keep taking care of me, you know what I mean? And that really is like, every time that I get stressed out or frustrated, I remember what I had told myself and what I've told other people I work with, and that just keep doing the next right thing and that we're going to stay vigilant about this stuff. And every time that I focused on my recovery, life has just gotten better. You know, it hasn't been exactly what I wanted. Right. You know, like I tried fighting for a while afterwards and I was like, this is going to be my big comeback into fighting. And that didn't work out. So I was like, shit, but I
see,
just kept
being
doing,
able to do that. Yeah. Being able to take that, you know, cause hey man, we can say what we want when your career is over. And you've spent years doing that. You're going to mourn that. You're going to mourn that being over. And being able to do that and not dip back into drugs, that's big time, man. So well done.
It is, but I'm of the mindset of we guys like you and me, based on the amount of like wreckage and pain that we have in our life, we have no good excuse to get high anymore, you know? So yeah. It, you mourn it, but like there's a lot of people who mourn real death without getting high. And that's the whole design for living thing that we've kind of committed to. That's really kind of what I've committed to. And it's like realizing that we don't have that excuse. It's not, there's no good reason for us to do any of that anymore. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, you know, you've talked about how hard it is to struggle with addiction, but how much harder we make it as a society for people with this disease. You know, what can we do better?
Education, always education. You know that I have a good friend who runs a treatment center and runs a sober living place. He's the head clinician there. And, you know, the more that we educate people about the stigma around it, you know, I mean, it's still like mental health and addiction are still like really frowned upon. People still think of this as a weakness that you and I have. And yep. I'm like, man, I'm a pretty strong fucking dude. You know, I'll take a beating and I'll keep going. But when it comes to this one thing, whether it's or for me, several things, my anxiety, my depression, my addiction, you know, I got no answers for it. And that, to, that to me is not a weakness. That's just like, that's something that there's an illness in my head, you know? I mean, and I think it's good that people are starting to know more and more about the disease of addiction.
Yeah, but man, you just put that beautifully. I mean, and it's emotional growth to know that, hey, look, this is why we were doing it all these years. And that's a good feeling, right? For years, I didn't know why I was doing things and what was wrong with me. And, you know, finally I went, well, a lot of people struggle with mental illness. And, you know, I'm one of those people. So once I could put my arms around it, you know, it felt much better.
It does. And especially, you know, I've always had these anxiety and depression issues, but I've never really, it's just been a thing. But now, like, I can recognize it and deal with it appropriately. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, that's how you do that? You know, like, I don't have to get high over that to, like, mask whatever it is at this point.
Whatever's bothering you. I know. It's so crazy. It's an absolute mind fuck. It really is. And, you know, when you look at all your opponents in the ring, how does the fight against addiction stand up?
So again, it's almost like if I'm fighting somebody, I'm never going to stop fighting until I am separated from consciousness or asleep from getting choked. The biggest thing with this was, like, you know, it's a corny, hokey thing that you hear in like some of the programs, but like, I really surrendered and then I quit fighting. And that was,
wow.
That made it easy. So, is it a fight? It's not a fight. Like, I don't wake up anymore going, fuck, I want to get high, but I'm not going to do it today. You know, I wake up every morning and I really do kind of count my blessings and see what I'm grateful for. And the work that I have to do for to stay sober is like minuscule compared to what I had to do to get high and to maintain that lifestyle. So I don't think it's a fight. I don't view it as a fight, you know?
That's great. That's great. What does a day in your life look like these days in Albuquerque?
Oh, I'm super boring, man. I get up and do roofing and then come home and see the family, hit a meeting, okay. You know?
Okay, good.
Yeah.
You know, the meetings, that's interesting too. You know, I did a ton of meetings and, you know, getting clean and sober is different for everybody. The one thing that I learned most about those meetings though, was it's camaraderie. And it's being able to be with other people and who, you know, nobody's putting on any airs. Everyone's a bit fucked up in here. And, you know, you can kind of share in that and in other people's stories. And, you know, think what you ever, you know, you said some of it's corny, whatever, but it's fucking important.
It is important. And, you know, a lot of that, they're starting to look at stuff as like, you know, isolation as being a really big deal for addicts, you know. And I'm a big fan of like whatever way you find your recovery is great for me as long as it's working. I found it a particular way and I stick with that, you know. And my big thing is not isolating myself from people, you know. I mean, the disease kind of wants us dead and wants us alone for that to happen. And they're starting to go more and more. They're starting to see how, just like you said, that camaraderie stuff is really plays into the real recovery, you know?
So now I'm going to give you my credentials, my stats from my playing days. I was about 6'4", 185, 190, 6'6", or 7 wingspan. I come walking into the gym. How are you training me? And do I have any sort of shot?
We're going to use your length, obviously. So. Okay. Yeah, and we're going to keep you away from people and make sure you and I are different fighters. I'm a short little fire plug and I like to get hit, but I do not want you getting hit. So we're going to learn how to use your jab and your kicks and stuff and keep you a distance till you can hurt somebody. But
man, we did a few boxing sort of workouts I've done some in my life and we did some with certain teams. I mean, one thing we did, a basketball drill. We just ran around the court with our arms up like this for 3 minutes thinking, you know, that's not too bad. You get to about a minute and you guys got to be up like this all the time. People don't understand the endurance and the strength and the mental fortitude.
It's a lot, man. It's like getting to any, I consider the UFC a high level. I never got to the heights of the UFC that I think I should have. But like once you're there, like you've developed a work ethic and a mental fortitude that is crazy, man. And like, and any sport, like at a pro level, even if you are riding a bench, you are a bad dude. You know what I mean?
No question about it. Yeah. You put your time in, a lot of practice, a lot of muscle memory, and you can't fake that stuff. You know,
no. So that's always what's amusing to me. Sorry, I'm going to mention your social media stuff here a little bit because I love it.
So, oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Well, I do it. It's cool to see you use your platform the way you do. I'm a fairly left leaning guy, as you are, and it's good to see guys like you and what's his face, David Bautista, and guys like that really kind of putting it out there. And I mean, you guys are like, he has a whole fan base that probably believes that Trump still won, right? But he's not afraid right. to, at this point he does it, but he's not afraid to lose that popularity because right. he knows what it means for real, you know?
Yeah, he picks his spots to be real and honest. Yeah, I appreciate that too.
And it's cool to see guys like you who have like, who really have that, using it for what it should be used for, man, you know? I wish I had the balls that you have most of the time, yeah.
Well, let's leave on this. The fight for sobriety and the journey you've had and been on, what do you want to tell others out there who are struggling, Ike?
Man, don't be afraid to open up about it. If you're struggling, talk to somebody. And like, I don't give that lip service. There's other guys on Twitter who I talk to, who I know personally. I answer messages when somebody says they're fucking hurting. I mean, like, I don't give that lip service because it is like, there needs to be somebody to listen and there needs to be somebody to listen when somebody really needs to reach out. So reach out and fucking find some, and be, if you can be of service and be the person to listen, do that, you know? I mean, you never know what you're going to affect, so.
And you never know what another person's going through. And yeah. Sometimes it just takes an ear, yeah. You know, to help them get through their day.
Yep.
Right?
There's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of strong people who have run their fucking cars into walls because they've never just opened up, you know? And that's the truth.
Isaac, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I think the world of you and much continued success. My door is always open to you, brother.
Thank you, man. Same. I appreciate it. This was good time, and it's nice to actually finally talk to you and not just see a block or charge, you know?
Same here. All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Charges, sharing our run-ins with the law. Charges, athletes, entertainers, and ballers. Charges, every celebrity ain't flawless. Charges, we came a long way from living lawless. Charges, sharing our run-ins with the law. Charges, athletes, entertainers, and ballers. Charges, every celebrity ain't flawless. Charges, we came a long way from living lawless. Charges.
A lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson,
leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.